If you're an American and you're professing to be a Christian,
well, of course, as American citizens, what we want is accountable leadership.
Why don't we throw in a constitution so they know what's in that?
Get engaged in the political process.
Honest. You, my friend, are part of the problem
and not the solution.
Compassionate.
The church needs to rise. Rise.
Monica Matthews Show.
Welcome back to the Monica Matthews Show. Happy week two. This is episode two, talking about burnout. What is it? What isn't it? Oh my gosh, this has become like the new industrial complex. Some of you don't even realize that you're not even burnt out. You're just done, right? You've been in the toaster a really long time, in your microwaves on X predominantly. Burnout used to be called a nervous breakdown when I was a kid. Do you remember that term? Nervous breakdown. I used to have I would envision Mariah Carey and the Divas. I think she did actually have a nervous breakdown, if I remember correctly. But a nervous breakdown, you know, I had these dancing visions of, you know, the damsel in distress and on a gurney and a jacket that zipped in the back that was monochromatic. And, you know, I'm thinking, why do these people burn out? Like, she's got the life that everyone wants to live. Just not thinking, you know, about the toll that life can take whenever you're burning it, not only at both ends of the candle, but in today's world, if you're not a superstar diva singer, you know, what does that look like for the average, not that any of you are average, if you're my listeners, by the way, but what does that look like for the average person, right? The mom who stays home with her kids, or the dad who's at home, the person coming off the battlefield, the person on the battlefield, the person waiting to go to the battlefield, the battlefields of your boardrooms, your bedrooms, right? Your families, your friends, your associates, your HOAs, those little Nazis in your neighborhoods, you know, the stressors of our lives, people who are just mean and cruel and things that you're up against daily, and you just take it in and you take it in. And especially if you're a high functioning, we talked about this last week in episode one. If you missed that, by the way, highly suggest you go back. It sets the infrastructure for the remainder of the conversation. Very important. It's an hour long, chock full of great nuggets, which we've gotten some great feedback from people this week that has been very helpful in helping them recognize that, oh yeah, crap, I might be, you know, on the burnout train at the moment. But, you know, we're surrounded by wickedness in high places making their way down here to the earth. But also, you know, just going through life, sometimes it just becomes natural to us to just be stressed the hell out all the time. So for me, I have to turn to my faith and apply biblical principles. Some of you are not faith-based people, and that's fine. I think you're still going to catch a ton of gold nuggets out of this conversation with my special guest, Chaplain Major Retired Chris Cairns, who I'll bring on in just a moment. But speaking of burnt out, okay, some of the things that happens with your immune system, you really do want to know. But if you could see what was going on inside of your bodies, beginning with your limbic system, because of burnout, because of chronic or acute stress, I think it would really shock you. So again, I'm super thrilled to bring you my new special offer with Dr. Saeed Haider and the team over at mygotodoc.com. You can use Monica Loves Health for 10% off of all kinds of things, like your disaster preparedness kit of antibiotics, your D-PAC, 6-week backup supplies of your regularly prescribed medications, and safe off-label COVID protocols for prevention and treatment. You can also utilize them as your actual telemed physician. So again, mygotodoc.com, Monica Loves Health is your 10% code. Super pumped about partnering with him. I love Dr. Haider. He's been, we've been in spaces together on Twitter, X, and he loves his patients. He has never not responded to one of my DMs. If one of my listeners has been in crisis, or a friend of a friend is, you know, just been diagnosed with cancer, He is at partners with someone who has a very specific cancer protocol. So for those of you who may be newly diagnosed with that or know of loved ones or friends and neighbors who have been, I would highly suggest going to mygotodoc.com and making your way over to Dr. Hyder. And he can put you in touch with the physicians who actually deal specifically with a cancer-specific protocol. So I'm very honored to partner with those guys. As you guys know, if you've been following me for any length of time, I don't partner with just anyone. So another reason why I've partnered with Gold Co. for you guys to protect what's yours, what's left of yours. Some of you in my audience have lost up to 45% of your retirement portfolio. And you want to talk about some stress. Some of you are not sleeping at night because you don't know where the heck your retirement's going to come from. Some of you are looking for second and third jobs as a retiree. You know, you're going to Walmart, you're going to McDonald's for the $20 an hour, I guess, is if you live in California, good luck with that. So protecting what's yours is part of stewarding what God blessed you with. Right. And if you've worked your butt off your whole life, you want to make sure that you protect what's yours. And one of the ways I've been, guiding my audience is to consider utilizing your 401ks and rolling them over into gold and silver, other metals if you can, without the federal implications, which can be pretty steep depending upon where you are in that retirement vicinity. So, Gold Co. is my go-to for that. And I know I've gotten plenty of emails from folks who sleep better at night knowing that they're not watching it dwindle in the stock market. This is not financial advice, by the way. This is me saying if I had a 401k, it would not be sitting in the stock market at the moment. It would absolutely be rolled into precious metals, which tend to hold their intrinsic value, as we know. So not a get-rich-quick scheme at all, but at least you can rest at night knowing that that it's not being raped and pillaged by the United States government. So without further ado, let's get back to our conversation from last week, which is talking about burnout, and a little bit of a recap from last week, what is burnout? And learning to recognize some of those symptoms. And Chris and I were talking offline about some things that have happened just in the past 24 hours in our personal lives that remind us of just how quick your body can be triggered by things that sometimes you think you've worked through, or they're just kind of lying latently within your nervous system because you're not focused on them at the moment. But the minute something triggers you, you can have a visceral reaction to it. So we're going to go over a little bit of that as well. But without further ado, Chaplain Major retired Chris Cairns, welcome back.
Hey, great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, I just love saying your title. And you guys will appreciate this. I'm like, why isn't there Army anywhere in your title? And you're like, well, because we're the best and we don't have to announce ourselves. Oh, okay. Fair. Anyway, you're just Chris to me. How about that?
You know, what's crazy is that I don't stand on ceremony. I'm just Chris. And whenever anybody calls me Father or the Reverend, I'm like, yeah, I'm the irreverent Reverend.
That's why we get along.
Please just drop all the pretense and let's just go with Chris. What I was going to say is, the funny thing, can't say ha ha because it conjures other things, but the funny thing about George Washington is that he established the infantry as the first organization in the United States Army. And the very second thing he did was establish the chaplain corps. So we're the second oldest organization in the United States Army, because Washington realized, hey, these soldiers might need a chaplain. So
that is an awesome tidbit of trivia. Of history. I did not know that. That's amazing. Smart man. I mean, if you're going into battle, you probably don't want to go in by yourself. So that's good to know.
Well, at the end of the day, I had this argument with the wrong kind of person becoming a chaplain. He was a 20-year Reserve Army major who thought that entitled him to something. And we argued about whether chaplains were combat multipliers or not. And I was like, I'm not just a combat multiplier. I'm not like a physician's assistant trying to duct tape people's souls back together to get them back in the fight. I'm aimed at helping people become healthy people. So whether they stay in the Army or leave the Army, they're healthy people. That has a side effect of becoming a combat multiplier, which is why I think our society continues to allow chaplains to serve as embedded missionaries in military units everywhere. But now even corporations and industry are, there's several different organizations. Corporate Chaplains of America is one of them, where a business owner can have somebody who's kind of the line of first defense against this trajectory of emotional ill health. And we have it all over our society. I was having breakfast with a retired brigade commander this morning, just having coffee and chatting. And we were just talking about how, you know, I go over to East Africa and everybody's filled with, and then I come in comparison to us. Then I come over here and we have everything and we're the most fouled up, neurotic people on the planet. So something's got to give. We got to figure out how to live within the margins of single finite human beings again.
Sure. You broke up there for just a moment whenever you said, you know, in Africa they have, and you broke up. And I think that's going to, someone's going to be driving down the road going, crap, what did he just say? So it's not your it's not your playback. It's us. So please repeat that.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, I go over to East Africa and hang out with Christians over there, and they're just so full of joy, but they're materially,
that's important. Okay. That's
materially
right.
deprived.
That's
and
right.
We come over here and we're not materially deprived, but we're spiritually and apparently emotionally deprived because we can't figure out how to live within the margins of a single finite human being.
Well, you know, that reminds me a little bit of my granddaughter. She has a playroom that would make, you know, Chuck E. Cheese ashamed, right? I mean, her playroom is insane. And what my daughter realized, and of course, I've got like a few big items, but for the most part, I've got a pot, a wooden spoon, and she is thrilled to just make some noise, you know, to beat on something. Like, the fewer choices, the better, is what my daughter realized very early on. So she started, you know, rolling out different toys at different times of the week. So it's always kind of like, oh, wow, look, I have new toys. But, and then she removes other toys. And so I think sometimes there's a hazard in having too many choices, to be honest with you. And I think it can mute the fact. That's a really important word. I'm glad I asked you to roll back over that one, because joy is one of the gifts, you know, that we've been given. It's one of the gems that it was actually the primary reason I knew it was time for me to exit from X to the extent that I have, because my joy was completely muted. And as I was paying attention to my body and my emotional responses to things and some of the things we're going to go over today and being able to recognize when you're burned out, I was beginning to recognize that I didn't care about anything, anyone, my audience, what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in Israel. Like, it's just the full moon, whatever the heck's supposed to happen on Monday. You know, I could not have cared less. And I thought, okay, this is not me. Something is robbing me of my joy. And understanding the cost that was paid on the cross for our joy to be complete, I thought, this is ridiculous. I've got to run. I've got to run. This thing is, I got to cut off my right arm. It's offending me. Cut off Twitter. It's offending me. That whole, you know, that whole premise. I've got to go. I got to get back to what's important. So I'm glad you said that. And yeah, it is astounding that, you know, it's all relative. However, I think we do have so many choices here and we're so inundated that it's very easy for very basic things that do make us happy and thrive and healthy as humans to become muted. So let's, if you don't mind, go back over, you know, a little bit, let's kind of rewind a little bit and remind our audience of some of the things that we talked about last week with regard to burnout. You know, what is it? I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but just what is it? I think some people have an idea of what that means, you know, but what is it from your perspective as a chaplain and how does that tend to manifest itself, not only amongst, you know, men and women within the ranks of the military, but within the corporate structure as well and within our family dynamics?
I'm going to be a horrible guest and go back to Too Many Toys and tell a story. And then I'll talk about last week. But
okay, Rebel, go ahead.
when our first child, Annalise, arrived, we, you know, she was daughter, and I was wrapped around her finger 10 seconds in, and so I'd like reset her toys every night and put them back in the cabinet for her to discover all over again. It was great. By the time we got to through our middle child, James, our youngest, I won't even name the middle child because they always get forgotten. But James was playing in a multiverse of like VeggieTales figures and action figures. And so, you know, you wonder where the Marvel multiverse comes from. It comes from the third child or fourth child, you know, getting all these collision of too many toys and exhausted parents who can't reset every night by the time they have their third or fourth child. But going back into what we talked about last time is that burnout is it's beyond exhaustion. It's when you have been exhausted chronically for a while. You've been under such a state of chronic stress that your body, your soul, your spirit are experiencing such a deficit of refresh, recharge, and rejuvenation that you stop enjoying things you normally enjoy. You stop being able to focus on work and be productive. Your sleep patterns are totally disrupted. Your relationships are starting to be affected. Because you're more irritable and you got a quicker fuse. And so, like you said, when you get to that point of you not being you, and it can get really serious down the road to burnout, which we'll talk about. But, you know, some of the early onset symptoms are just this state of exhaustion that makes it impossible to cope with your normal healthy coping strategies. And so you start picking up a tendency toward reaching for less healthy coping strategies. You also tend to have some thoughts of self-doubt that you wouldn't normally have in areas where you are competent and capable. You might start having a greater cynicism. I mean, I have the gift of critique, which is a tough gift to steward. But I joke now that I'm an idealist trapped inside the body of a cynic. If I weren't an idealist, I wouldn't care anymore. I'd just say, you know, screw you, society. Good luck.
Which is pretty much where I was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's where a lot of people in our society are, but, one of the words that's thrown around when you read articles about burnout is depersonalization, where you start depersonalizing other people and you could be an empath, but now you're not empathic anymore.
That's right.
And, in the chaplain corps, right about the early 2000s, chaplains started having compassion fatigue. And a friend of mine wrote about that. And that compassion fatigue happens to nurses and doctors. If you're around medical personnel or soldiers who've been in combat, you'll, and you're just a civilian and you're not medical, you'll find that what they're joking about is shocking to you.
Right.
Because for them, it's just a Tuesday. But for you, you've never seen this before in your life.
Right. Some of the most ghoulish friends I have are emergency responders.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, guys. Yeah.
And that depersonalization happens over time to them, even if they're healthy people.
Right.
Because it's just a defense mechanism. You can't possibly be personally affected by every situation, or you're not going to be able to function in a job.
Right.
So that happens to soldiers and first responders. But if you're an empath, if you're in a service industry, if you're used to being a counselor and responding to people with empathy, and then suddenly you're completely drained of the capability,
sure.
You know, you need to start being concerned about where this is going.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. That's another, that was another barometer, for me. I do see my on-air work as my ministry. And so there's a lot of empathy that goes into it. People count on me to be a microphone for them, to be their voice, to, you know, hey, we need financial help. We have financial needs. We, you know, we need this. I need that. I need this. Monica. And I'm not one to get hung up on, oh, I have to do it all for the world and woe is me and it all counts on me. That's not it. But because I am empathetic, it can become extremely exhausting. And then I'm dealing with just your run of the mill idiots on social media. You know, you add that into, who are just partisan about everything, right? Cause you can't even be human or have a decent conversation unless Trump or Biden or somebody else political is brought into the conversation. It's just maddening. So I knew that, okay, so this is way off for me. I don't care about your needs anymore. Matter of fact, I tweeted to my audience. I was like, listen, I love you all. I'm closing my DMs. Okay. You're going to have to go to someone else and you're going to have to go to God in prayer. I'm sorry. I don't have anything left to give anyone right now. And I didn't. And so I just had to put up that, you know, that friggin' cement wall for just a little while. But I got to tell you something along these lines. I'm coming up on 3 weeks of being off of Twitter to the extent that I have, you know, been engaged in the past. And I've now, my screen time is down by 87%. What I realized, thank you, my AI phone that thinks for me and monitors my every breath. But probably a lot more, as we both know. But
you think it's your phone, but it's actually the Chinese.
Is, and that's a whole other show that we will do in the future. So no stressor there, right? Thank you, Xi Jinping and the CCP and everyone else who listens in on my conversations. So listen, but with that, what I realized though is that someone contacted me, someone within my ministry and our fellowship who's new to our fellowship, former law enforcement. And he just tragically and violently lost someone in his family just this past week in a car accident the cause was a high speed chase. And it's here local to me, and he asked for prayer, and they were just, the whole family's completely torn up about it. The young man was like 33 years old, just a mess. And there were two fatalities. He was one of them and the suspect was the other. And when I prayed for both families, and I recognized it in my heart, really grieved for whoever this young man was who stole the car, you know, my point is, my immediate response was not one of accusation and anger. And just 2.5 weeks ago, it would have been like, well, that's what he gets for stealing a car. You know, it had just been like, right. Well, the education system has failed everybody and the friggin' Democrats have done blah, blah, blah. That would have been my inward chatter, because that's the dialogue that I've been steeped in for so long, along with everyone else, that had literally started to hijack who I am and really led to my burnout. And so I recognized it immediately, and I just praised God in the moment, because I was like, oh, there you are. You know, it was like dusting off just this, you know, all of the mess I see, it is like this muddy lake bottom. And once things can finally clear and settle, now I can actually see, you know, who I am underneath all of this stuff. And I'm like, okay, there I am again. Thank God. And so having these little moments of clarity of like, yeah, I mean, it's tragic that A, someone felt the need to steal someone else's car, B, to be tragically killed and not have an opportunity to turn their lives around. And someone lost a son, you know, someone lost possibly a dad or an uncle or a cousin. And we've become so disconnected, like you said at the top of the hour, from this the humanity of things, you know, of life and what's going on. So anyway, okay, stage one, we're there. Stage two, you said cynicism, you know, a form of detachment. I think we talked yesterday about decreased satisfaction in your accomplishments, right? Social withdrawal. You can't take compliments. And that was another barometer for me. People are like, oh, thank you so much for what you do. And I'm literally rolling my eyes on the other end of the phone where I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about right now. Okay. I don't feel like I do anything, but thanks. That was another point for me to go, okay, something is not right because I can't even enjoy my work, which we talked about last week as well. So what is stage three of well, burnout?
One of the articles I read, and this goes back to our previous conversation, again, rebel guest, not answering your exact question, but there's a stage where you feel flattered that other people think you're productive. And so you take on more than you should.
Yes.
And then you start feeling overwhelmed because you've taken on more than you should. A lot of us in the service industries are yes people. Yes, I can do that. Sure, I'll do that for you. Oh, I can do that. And so we take on all this stuff. And we're full of energy at the beginning. We're excited about all this stuff we've been flattered into taking on. And then the onset of stress, and it starts affecting our physiology. We start getting headaches, a constancy of anxiety, not just being anxious so that you're productive in your procrastination moments, but the kind of anxiety that just doesn't leave when your peace disappears and you can't get it back. Then you stop noticing whether you're not eating or overeating. Your sleep patterns get disrupted. That causes, you know, a deeper level of fatigue because if it just keeps going and going, that chronic stress becomes persistent exhaustion. And so that's when you start experiencing, you know, you've never been an alcoholic, but you're starting to drink way more than you used to.
So is this all part of the coping mechanisms? Because because your normal coping mechanisms, whatever those are, they could have started out to be healthy. Now they've taken a turn.
Right. Yeah. Or they're unhealthy and socially acceptable, but now you're starting to do things that aren't even socially acceptable, right, at the margins of your communities of influence and your networks. Getting back to your Twitter habit, James and I was watching some political something, and he noticed this tribalism that, you know, people are fighting all the time about inanities in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, and I was like, well, James, you know, he was talking about overseas people judging Americans for arguing all the time and our tribalism. And I was like, well, James, it wasn't until mass communications that our idiots had a platform. So it used to take two weeks to get our best communications across the ocean. And now we can, you know, our idiots have a platform to communicate all throughout the world. So, but
don't forget the KGB prefix to that, which is useful. Okay. They are not only idiots, but they are useful idiots. Okay. So,
that reminds me of another point where, if you're experiencing chronic stress, feeling overwhelmed, you start drinking one too many, you will become useful to somebody. You know, you'll become prey, or you'll become predator. And that kind of isolation that's caused by this makes you more susceptible to some of those things at the fringes of your networks of relationships, including, as we talked about last time, the use of another person for one's own self-pleasure, whether, you know, sexually or emotionally.
Right.
You know, women may not be as susceptible to men as in some things, but inappropriate emotional relationships, you know, that you just wouldn't normally entertain.
Right.
But you need the dopamine or the drug or the, you know, the hit, the something to take the edge off. And that leads to, you know, even more self-doubt, more self-condemnation. You know, what the enemy of God loves to do is throw some bait out for you. You're enticed by your own desires and you jump on the bait, and then he whips around and accuses you having a thought that wasn't your thought in the first place.
Right.
He planted it there. And so you get into this cycle of self-condemnation. I've seen this so many times as a counselor where some people just get into a really dire situation where their self-condemnation is an identity for them instead of, you know, it's almost as toxic as the performance-based identity we were talking about last time, where now it's a woe is me, you know, I'm a victim, I can't get up, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Right. So is it like self-pity, like on crack?
Yeah, and it's kind of like, if you call yourself a sinner, then it's going to come naturally to you to think, oh, well, what a sinner does is sin. So, you know, nobody's perfect.
Right.
And then you plow right back into the things that cause you to self-condemn. And this leads to a pessimism that it can be really difficult to get out of without massive intervention, rehab level.
Wow.
You know, psychology or spirituality professionals getting involved.
And at this point, you know, I guess would physical manifestations be like panic attacks, chest pain?
Yeah.
Like we're talking about breathing, you know, not breathing deeply enough. You know, I think, listen, speaking on behalf of the church, who is literally afraid of their own shadow most of the time, you know, people are afraid to breathe because they, you know, they're afraid of yoga and I'm not a proponent of yoga practices, per se, just from the whole perspective of what all that comes from and the occultism of it and all that. But I'm not afraid to breathe. I'm not afraid to breathe deeply. One of the ways I help my granddaughter reset when she's, you know, being two, and just, you know, being you, my rebel guest, you know, where she's you know, on her diaper changing table, like, hell no, we won't go. And she's having a moment and I'm like, all right, I'll start counting backwards from five and my voice changes. And then I'm like, okay, breathe in. And we breathe in together and breathe out. And now it's become this thing where she does it with me. And it will literally stop whatever's going on. There's no yelling. There's no fighting. There's no shaming. I don't get exasperated. It's just like, okay, she's being two. You know, it is what it is. But how do I help her regulate in, you know, at least on a limbic level of and not have to have a psychology session over it? How do I help her regulate so that we can move past this and get back to, you know, throwing water balloons at each other in the backyard? So you know, that I think people, I think again,
yeah,
go ahead.
It turns out that breathing is good for you.
Yeah. Right.
And so is drinking water. I was talking about this earlier today. Guy was telling me that, his wife seems to have the hardest problem just drinking water. And I think in our marriage, I'm the one who struggles drinking water. Cause I'm like coffee all morning, mm-hmm. and Diet Cokes all afternoon and preferred beverage in the evening. And she's like, just drink water.
Right. Your kidneys are begging you, please just drink water. Yes.
Yeah. It turns out that's not a good hydration strategy. So just, you know, the fact that Americans are wandering around dehydrated and chronic stress, not breathing. It's just like, this is not rocket science, people. This is breathing and drinking water. Well,
don't get me started. I know I'm about to offend some of our listeners. Please forgive me. I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. I have a really hard time. See, you're bringing out the rebel in me. This is trash. This is garbage. Okay. Listen, the thing that really gets me. Okay. We live in the United States. Well, very divided states of America right now. Okay. And we are known literally as the most obese nation on the planet. And when people talk to me about food deserts, I have done shows about this where they used to call my station en masse to try to get me fired because I was so inconsiderate. And I realized that not everyone has access to certain things to the extent, you know, that others do. You may have to drive 5 miles to a grocery store. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm laughing with you about we live in water deserts, apparently food deserts. You know, you've got people walking around the mall with camels on their backs that usually hikers would use. Maybe that's what you need to do, Chris. You need to just strap a camel to your back.
Well, exercise helps you want to hydrate.
Yes, so, it does.
You know, the amount of sugar intake, that, you know, you're not even aware of, because if they would put the recommended daily allowance of sugar on the back of everything,
right,
which they put for everything else, vitamin A, you know, really necessary stuff they put it for, but they don't put it down for sugar. Like, our sugar intake is insane.
For sure. For sure. Well, and then I could slam you right now for doing the diet drinks, right? And the carbonation, you know, all those things that so many things were linked to diet drinks, particularly around the brain, you know, and then we're talking about burnout and, you know, and the things that help our bodies physically, you know, mitigate the stressors. Let me ask you something. So how have we allowed ourselves to get here? Is this a lack of self-value? Lack of value for others? Is this a prioritization? Because I personally think the order of that is that I'm going to prioritize anything. If I think I'm valuable and my life is too, and so is my time and the time of others, I will prioritize. I don't believe in balance. I do not subscribe to work-life balance. We may have hit on this last episode. I'm not sure. But my daughter taught me in her ripe old age of 17, when she was 17, Mom, there's no such thing as balance. It is called prioritization. And I think that's a real game changer for some people. Maybe some of you are about to have an aha moment with that. It's prioritization. If you're trying to balance and you're spinning 5 plates at a time, you can't effectively. No one's very effective at that. Also, I was taught to, because I'm a person, you will greatly appreciate this. You ready? I'm going to be a rebel on my own show and talk over my guests. So here's the deal. Bad manners corrupts, you know, what is it? Bad company corrupts good manners. This is all your fault.
Yeah,
okay. So something like that. So my, one of my dear friends, who's also happens to be a Christian therapist and my daughter's godmother, taught me a long time ago. I went to her about just some very stressful times when I was first starting in radio. And she said, Monica, everyone tends to have like the chest of drawers, right? And just look at your life that way. And envision like pulling out, you know, or maybe like one of those, those old mailboxes that, you know, that people have in their homes is, you know, artifact piece, whatever, a antique piece, excuse me. And she said, but just recognize when all of your drawers are out, right? And instead of allowing all the drawers to be out, what happens when all the drawers are out? You have a tendency to tip over. Okay. So push, you know, pull a drawer out, deal with what you need to deal with. Same thing with hats. People like different visuals, right? And they're like, oh, I'm wearing 20 different hats. Okay. Well, remember not to stack the hats on top of one another. This is not Cat in the Hat. This is take off one hat, put the other one on. And that may happen within 10 minutes. That may happen within 5 minutes, you know, but be cognizant of, okay, I got to switch gears. And as a female, I have a very weird ability to compartmentalize, much like a man does, probably because of some of the more traumatic things that have happened in my life that I've had to deal with in order, that was my coping mechanism to get through the terminal illness of my husband, to get through raising a child on my own. You know, that was the only way I knew to cope, was to pile on the hats, okay? And I thought I was doing a good job compartmentalizing, but what I was really doing was stacking those hats, and all the drawers were open on my chest of drawers. And now I have to cognizantly stop and be very present and, okay, hold on. I'm trying to like chase my 2-year-old grandkid. I'm trying to answer investors. I'm trying to deal with advertisers, and I've got my phone in my hand, and I've got my computer in front of me, and the door is ringing, and the landscapers, and we've got a podcast. And I'm like, whoa, wait, okay, stop. This is not, I have to prioritize. So how do we allow ourselves to get to this point? Is it a lack of self-value?
Well, it can be, but it can also be just becoming a workaholic and not understanding that, you know, regardless of which drawer you're dealing with or whether you're compartmentalizing or multitasking, there are certain things in your life that are depleting, and there are things in your life that are reinvigorating or refreshing or recharging. Mm-hmm. And if everything in your life is depleting, you're going to be depleted. And if you deplete yourself beyond the finite human being and you do that chronically, you know, I think multitasking is something we pride ourselves about, but it can actually be a sign that, as you say, we lack prioritization. And I think the other reason that we've gotten here as a society or as in the West, it was really interesting that when we went to war with one another and ended slavery, it was the industrial North that was commodifying people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the turning time into a commodity, like we don't even realize that minutes and seconds don't actually exist. They're just units of measure imposed on the distance between events. And so we commodify time, we commodify ourselves. And I think this is a temptation that God's enemy wants us to take the bait, commodify everything, make ourselves into necessaries instead of beloved. We'll exhaust ourselves.
What's the difference between a necessary, so define beloved, like define those necessaries and beloveds.
Well, if I know that, just to use a human example, instead of over spiritualizing as a theologian often will, you know, like if I know that my wife loves and supports and believes in me, I leave the house differently.
Right.
If I think, you know, as sometimes I often do in my line of work, like she wishes I made more money and she wishes she had married a banker and she doesn't support my dreams, you know, I, because they don't pay anything. you know, I'll feel very differently about believing in myself and what maybe even God is leading me toward.
Sure.
Even if the conversation was just in my head, and I didn't actually have it out loud. Like, I know what she always is going to say. So being beloved in a spiritual way is like, hey, God put me on the planet, didn't have to fill this time and space in history with me in particular. And so I must be, I'm going to start singing Veggie Tales. God made you special and it's plain to see. You know, like it's just this sense in which we have purpose,
right?
Not because the world needs everything we have to offer at all times as if we were God.
Right.
But we have purpose because God loved us enough to put us on the planet and to breathe life into us and to give us the privilege of being image bearers of a loving God and to love others in his name. And when we don't do that, we can start neglecting our own self-care and our own needs because we don't see that to sustain serving others, we have to be healthy ourselves. It can't self-care and mindfulness and all this stuff that's being thrown around by secular society has some basis in fact, but you can go overboard with that. There's ditches on both sides of this road. An over self-focus and an under others focus is a diabolical problem. But if you neglect self-care and you're not drinking water and you're not breathing deeply and you start pushing through the stop signs of all of the increased risks, heart disease, high blood pressure, stress-related problems, diseases, depression, and it can even lead to literal physical collapse. I don't know if you and I were talking about it, but one of my commanders worked out a lot to take the edge off, and that seems like a healthy thing, but he was doing it so much that his muscles started eating themselves.
Jeez.
And he ended up in the hospital for a week. Right. And that's the thing, is like, you can't serve others. You can't serve anybody if you take yourself out of the fight, which is what God's enemy wants, is to destroy us and take us out of the fight.
That's right. I was going over some of my notes here and talking about, I think something that happened during COVID was kind of interesting. So remember we were talking about essential versus non-essential personnel. And I think that really did a number on the psyche of people. What a fantastic segregation tool, by the way. If you're into the conspiracy theories, I happen to believe that we're no longer living in theories, that all the conspiracies are probably true. So it's no longer theoretical. But whenever you look at
just because people are out to get you doesn't mean you're not paranoid
exactly.
Or whatever.
Whatever. So but if you look at what that's done and kind of this exponential explosion in this industrial complex of everyone's depressed, now everyone has PTSD. Okay. Now it's like, well, hold on. How do I know is everyone traumatized? Right. I mean, and to me, it upsets me because there's very real trauma that people have suffered, right? Whether it's on the battle, it used to only hear these terms in your circles as it relates to, military service or first responder service, you know, police personnel, police service, all of that. You would hear this traumatic, you know, PTSD. But now it's rolled over into, my God, even your 2-year-old can have trauma, you know, and it's like, because you told them no, or you don't want to traumatize them, you know, and we become this fragile, society, I think. And so, and also just diminishes very real struggles that people do have that are very clear struggles within, again, the limbic system, you know, that I think people need to have treatment for, but and spiritual help as well. But when we're talking about the essential versus non-essential, I think you know, like kind of that, it's not even a balance. It's a, to me, it's a spiritual prioritization where it's like understanding, yes, that you are the beloved. Therefore you're not driven to do anything. You're led, you know, you're led in life as opposed to being driven. But what do you think about my theory that some people, really took on, especially the people who lost their jobs, that they're not essential. Essential. What a word, right? I mean, we're all essential. Let me just put that out there for all of our listeners. Every one of you listening, you are essential. There's no one gets to distinguish just because of your job that you are essential or non-essential. And I, that's coming from someone who was dubbed an essential employee, right? I was one of the few people at our station who had to be on the air, and that's because I would be called in for crisis type situations. And I love those situations because I'm very calm in them, and I enjoy helping people remain calm. And so I was this essential employee, but that really did a number on some people around me, I'm just going to tell you. And they have not recovered from that. It really got into their psyches that they were no longer essential. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as I may have mentioned, my wife calls me the most overly affirmed child she's ever met. So I was so beloved by my mother that I've always seen myself as essential and a blessing just because I've shown up.
Well, that's so probably true.
I assume I'm going to be a blessing, but I don't always bless people when I shoot off at the mouth. I think it's even better than we're essential to God. We're loved.
Yes.
And we just don't, we're so, it's such a foreign concept for us to be loved because he is a lover.
Right.
Not because of what we've done to earn it, not because we're so neato that we're extra special and we're elected and everybody else is not. We're loved because that's who he is. And it's hard for us to come to grips with that. But it is, when we come to grips with that, it is transformative. It has the power to transform us so that we don't get to this place of deep burnout and a sense of inner emptiness. One of my favorite singer-songwriters, David Wilcox, wrote a song, "That's What the Lonely Is For." And he talks about the heart being like a cathedral that needs the warmth and the light that it was built for. And we end up feeling this inner sense of emptiness and depression, and we can blame it on trauma. I thought that only military people experienced PTSD, and I had to kind of wake up to the fact that no. What about police officers? No. Right. What about emergency room? What about first responders? What about EMTs?
What about rape victims?
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah. It's like I had to my own view of it, of trauma, had to expand. On the other hand, my pinky toe hangnail is, you know, getting caught on my sock is not trauma.
Right, right.
It's an irritation. So we've been in some cases, underdiagnosing PTSD, and in some cases, overdiagnosing PTSD, even in the military. I think burnout symptoms overlap with PTSD to such an extent that some people are misdiagnosing themselves, and even the behavioral health category or discipline is overdiagnosing it because that's all they have to throw at it. And the medical personnel are just medicating the symptoms. And you know, the chaplain, theologian types are like, it's a demon or it's spiritual.
Right. Right.
Well, maybe it started there, but that's not necessarily where it's going to end. So, you know, I think that this idea of being non-essential, when you think about fight the patriarchy, but when you think about women being considered to be lesser than because they stay at home, like when Hillary Clinton said, "Well, I could have just stayed home and baked cookies."
And wouldn't the world have been a better place for it? But, yeah, right. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, and my mom was one of the last of a generation of women proud to put homemaker down on her as her vocation. She didn't feel diminished. She didn't feel that her work was unimportant. She didn't feel non-essential. And sure. I had to laugh out loud when one of my commanders said, you know, let's be honest, chaplain, in combat, you're non-essential personnel.
Wow.
And I was just thinking, I laughed in his face. So
because you're that rebel. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that got me a higher evaluation, but you know, I thought of all of the chaplains, in World War II and Vietnam who were crawling under fire, going places, you know, the medic wouldn't even go,
right,
to give last rites, to pull people out and drag them back. I mean, yeah. some of the most extraordinary stories are non-combatants,
sure,
you know, going into those situations. So, you know, I think of all of the prayer meetings in churches that are full of older women. And at first I was like, where are all the guys who like intercessory prayer? Mm-hmm. But then I thought a lot of these older women grew up as homemakers, you know, came into their vocation as homemakers, and they would, every sock that they folded, every chore that they did, they were constantly thinking of and interceding for mm-hmm. their husbands and their kids. And to diminish that as non-essential, you know, when to God, like communion with him, is what's essential. What right. we're headed for eternity is communion with him. When we think ourselves so self-important that right. we think, I don't have time to spend time with God in the word or in prayer this morning because I'm so important, I've got to go do these 50 tasks. Well, we lose our peace. And then the way that we do those tasks is full of jittery anxiousness,
right,
and anxiety. And it's just, you know, these are the severe costs of this path toward burnout. And it's so much easier, just like it's so much easier to stay in shape than it is to get back into shape when you've let yourself go like for 3 years.
Right.
It's so much harder to get out of deep stages of burnout than it is to just, hey, avoid these signs and these tells and these, when you start running on adrenaline, you feel like you can make it. And it feels pretty good because you're getting these adrenaline rushes, but they're finite. They're going to dissipate and you're going to crash.
Yeah, for sure. You know, just kind of circling back to, excuse me, the prioritization and, you know, what you just said, remember you and I were talking the other day about how we know a lot of folks, particularly within the DOD, and certain agencies kind of spread out, who would think that their work is just, you know, the single most important thing to keeping America afloat. Right. And they work their faces off and they're to the detriment of their families, and their health. And they may leave with a plaque if that, but generally speaking, these guys, primarily men and some women, end up in a convalescent home, you know, with no one knows who they are. Yeah. That, you know what I mean? And I think about that with some of my friends who strive within the infrastructure of the military industrial complex, and they strive and they're like crabs in a bucket, you know, and because it's already a system that is set upon achievement and hierarchy and, you know, God almighty, we could talk about the politics of the military for days, but just thinking about what people go through to strive, you know, to become career, military folks is a whole other show in and of itself, which I'd be happy to entertain. but when you think about prioritization and the casualties that are left in the wake, and then you get to the end of your life. And I have to be honest, I'm not at the end of my life, I hope. I don't think I am anyway. None of us know. Well, none of us know. That's right. And so, but I don't even think I'm middle-aged because, you know, apparently we're supposed to live to like 120. So I'm not quite middle of the road, but middle of,
Drink water.
Borrow your camel. Breathe oxygen. Right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, inhale and exhale. So, and she laughs every time I do it. It's hilarious because she's like, oh, here goes my grandmother. She's crazy, but let's do it. So, excuse me. We, now you've completely derailed my thought.
You were talking about circling back around.
I was talking about circling. Yes. Well, talking about this, the things that we think are important. Okay. And I did have kind of this come to Jesus realization when I just hit the delete button on my phone of several social apps. Actually, I haven't been on Facebook and that criminal dashboard in the past like 4 years, but but I have been very active on X, and not as a spectator, but primarily. Imagine how hard that was to delete that, as because it's the basically my touch point through my profession in media. And so, but what I realized was, wait a minute, it caused me to reevaluate my priorities. What is the quality? What is the quality of my life? Right? What makes for a quality life for Monica? And that's not going to be the same as you. And I'm not married, you know, I'm widowed. And so I have the luxury, some of you married folks would say, of only being concerned with what is the value system of my own life, and what, whenever I'm 90, you know, if I do that exercise of I'm on my deathbed, who's around me and what do they say? What would they say about me? Right? Who's writing my obituary and what are they saying about me? And so how is my soul being fed and how am I feeding others? Right? Because I'm my happiest whenever I am serving others and I'm not so self-focused, but even that, as we've discussed, can become, you know, out of whack. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just sharing the fact that in my own journey of this burnout, which I'm excited about entertaining some of the prospects that you and I have discussed about creating a little something for folks along these lines that can help them on their journey, because I'm fine being very transparent about mine. No shame in this game over here, and it does help people. I did have to take some inventory, and I had to take some very serious inventory about what my priorities are and what's important to me, and understanding that my eternity is going to be a hell of a lot longer, or heaven a lot longer than my, you know, my immediate future, like than today. And what do I value? You know, is he going to look at me and say, I never knew you, you know, and all of my doing, all of my, getting, all of my striving and making sure that, you know, and so one of the things that I've done, in my 81% of my life back, I think I'm 81% screen time, down in my screen time, which is such a blessing. Cause what I've now done is taken on, some training in areas that have long held my interest, and I just haven't made the time to prioritize them. And now I can. And so now I have a new word that I've implemented into my daily life, which is stewarding. How am I stewarding every aspect of my life, my time, my joy, my peace, things that he died to give me? How am I stewarding my gifts, my talents, my time, my talent, my treasure? How am I stewarding? And I don't mean to be hyper religious about it. I'm very serious. That is my new north. How am I stewarding the gifts that he's given me? And time is one of our gifts. So I just wanted to share that and be, you know, the rebel host.
Well, I'll be the rebel guest.
Yeah, go ahead.
finish us off with, you know, this idea that you're sitting in the old folks' home looking over your shoulder at your body of work. You remember that old commercial? I forget what it was for, but it was like a bunch of kids talking about their future goals. And it was like, I want to be forced into early retirement. and it caused me to think that, you know, nobody in the old folks home is like, I'm glad I was a flash in the pan big deal.
I'm so glad I finally got to 176,000 followers on Twitter X.
Right, exactly. Like,
right.
I always that the nationwide commercial that's like, that's going to get tens and tens of likes.
Right. Right.
I believe, you know, you said, I never knew you. Yeah. Is not as good a thing as well done, my good and faithful servant.
Right.
Obviously, especially in light of eternity, but the word to know, I never knew you. I was never within you by my spirit. Knowing and being known in the biblical sense is intimacy. And, you know, we think we're doing all of these impressive things on earth during our lifetime. And, it's like, that poem by that famous poet, Ozymandias, about the statue of Kublai Khan in Xanadu, where like it's a half buried statue of the mighty no longer with us. And you walk through the National Cemetery at Arlington, where I will be visiting the graves of some of my relatives this weekend. And you walk through West Point Cemetery, where I've spent a little bit of time growing up, and you just see all of these impressive people. Like in West Point Cemetery, you're like, oh, there's Custer's grave, and right. You're walking through Arlington National Cemetery, and some of these monuments to people you've never heard of,
right?
And you see the 3-star general sign on their grave marker, and you're just like, never heard of that guy. So what is a value? What is it that we value? It's something, it's a good thing to just stop, get off all social media, stop and ask yourself, you know, what is fundamental to my life? What do I value the most? 'Cause I don't really care if my, you know, sons and daughter end up, lawyers, doctors, you know,
right.
Dancers, flutists, if they value what I value, that's what I care about. Did they come to value what I value? And right. It does seem that that is becoming the case, that they value relationships above, with God, others, and with their true identity as the beloved of God.
Right. Well, and next week we're going to get into more about that, you know, and how to shape some things in your life with regard to values, and what are some of the things that you can put in place, you know, to help kind of shape that for you, whether it's having a life mission, you know, things that people, you know, at the beginning of every year, people are like, oh, we're going to do this, and I'm going to make this and this. You know, I'm going to go to the gym, and all these declarations that we make and we don't keep them. And I think, you know, I think it's healthy to have, you know, a family meeting, a meeting with yourself, you know, every so often. It's on the calendar, and it's not just whimsical. It's not just whenever everyone's upset, everything's exploding. People are, you know, something I told you that I do for my kids, my daughter and my son-in-law, to help them mitigate some of the challenges that they go through as a young couple, right, with a young child. And they were newlywed about a year into marriage when my daughter became pregnant. And so they were just getting to know each other, you know, and my husband died when I was like 28. So, and it was kind of the same thing, you know, when we were getting to know each other. So, so I wasn't older, you know, some people have already got their careers, you know, that they're established and then they get married and do that whole thing. But my daughter and I are kind of on the same page with this. And so she had her, 25, same age I had, my daughter. And they were just coming out of, you know, college and getting their feet grounded and, you know, trying to figure out what they were going to do with their $265,000 education. I'm not bitter. But they're like, hey, this is really important to us. Some of our values are that we still have date time, you know, and we make time for each other. So, where Go-Go fits into that because, you know, I'm nobody's grandmother. I'm Go-Go. See, there you go. I even have a burnout grandmother name. So it's like, I was like, why do you want to call me Go-Go? What about Oma? Like, I'm German. Like, why can't we do that? Or Yaya? Because yeah, it's
how
Greek.
How about stop, stop?
How about stop, stop? How about slow your roll? Right. So that's awesome. So she was like, Go-Go. Because you're always on the go. So now I'm Go-Go. So there you go. And, you know, I'm always on the go until I'm not. But something I shared with you is that it's find ways to invest, you know, in other people and their ability to make themselves a priority, make their relationship a priority. One of the ways I do that for the kids is I will take her for either a weekend a month or, you know, one night out of the weekend or just on surprise. You know, I kidnapped her about a year ago and took her on her first spring break with me for a whole week. That was awesome. And they had a whole week to themselves, you know, to recalibrate and to reconnect and to reprioritize some things. So I think, you know, communication being fundamental. And I love something you taught me just this week, that communication is affection, you know, and that to communicate affection. And I interpreted that as communication is affection, you know, and it is important to communicate. It's for us to communicate in prayer with Father and to receive our rest, to enter into that rest and be able to bring that as our prioritization tool back into all of our relationships. So, you know, investing in other people is again, yes, as we've stated throughout this past hour, it's investing in others is obviously wise. It is healthy. It is godly. It is loving. It is what makes the world go round, but certainly cannot be at the expense of yourself and your own mental health. So parting thoughts, Chaplain.
Well, I'm looking around my library, which you have seen, which is full amazing. Of the artifacts of my personal history, you know, my ancestry and the Cairns family and the Magnuson family are kind of like the Forrest Gumps of American history. We were never famous. You know, I'm looking at the Colonel Commission of my four great grandfather that's signed by James Madison and Monroe. I'm looking at my grandfather shaking Kennedy's hand, shaking Johnson's hand, a picture of him hanging with Sam Rayburn, after whom the Rayburn Building is named. And I'm looking at a picture of the chaplain who prayed over the airmen about to go on a mission from the bomb group my grandfather commanded in World War II in Italy. And I'm just thinking about the investments that all of these people made in others, so that, you know, my mom she's proud of her dad for having been a congressman, but she loves her dad because he was daddy.
Right.
I'm proud of my grandfather because he was a bomb group commander, but I didn't even know that, or I wasn't even cognizant of that. He was just my grandpa. Mm-hmm. It's knowing them, not knowing their accomplishments, that is the real treasure. And to look at these airmen who are about to go fly on a mission in this photograph of a chaplain praying for them, when faith has to matter, it's like gun to your head, what do you believe? And if you don't recant, we're going to shoot you. You know, what is it that you say?
Right.
And that's what we're going to talk about next week, about how to arrange our lives around knowing and being known, knowing ourselves better, knowing the gift that is this life and our time in it, and how to arrange our lives around those most fundamental of valuable and important things, so that we can make decisions about, you know, not everything is on fire and urgent.
Right.
That may just be somebody else's dumpster fire and it's not yours. So why are you letting it drag you and entice you into
Learn to let it float anger. On by.
That's right. That's right. And especially with your feed, with your social media feed, it's right. like, oh, I could help here. I could disabuse the ignorant of their right. Idiotic notions.
Right.
But is that my real mission? No, I think I'll move on with my life. So
there, you know, there's a scene. I'll close with this. There. It's an awful scene. Okay, but it's in the Book of Eli, which I love that movie. And it jumps out at me because he, I'm not going to give you, if you haven't seen the movie, I highly suggest you do. Could be days ahead after the eclipse. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But Denzel Washington, which he could literally do a trash bag commercial and I would watch it with great intent, because yeah, he's amazing. And excuse me, there's a scene where he is, he is witness to, For those of you, if you know, you know, he is a witness to, in some way, shape, or form, this rape scene in this movie. And this young woman, as actually several, are being harassed, and it's just a melee. It's just post apocalyptic, you know, it's lawlessness galore, and you have these roving bands of crazy people who are just, you know, pillaging and raping and just craziness. And so, but he's on a mission. And this is pretty extreme. Okay. I'm not suggesting that you just walk on by, because we have enough people doing that in this day and age. But it's pretty extreme, but he's on a mission, and he looks down on this scene because he's kind of hidden, but he can see what's about to happen. And you see him have to make a decision that if he gets involved in that, and he's totally outnumbered, by the way, but that if he stops, he will miss his next stop of where he's supposed to be on his mission. And that always stood out to me. I wasn't offended by the fact you could stop and be offended by how that was written, and that, oh, I can't believe he didn't stop and help her. But my takeaway from that was there are some things in some fights that are just not yours. And social media is designed to draw you into every fight. Not just right. those on your own line, right? Not on your own timeline, but on others. And as someone who values the truth, and I value justice, and I value freedom, and I value people, when I see injustices online, I see liars and I see manipulators, it is extremely tempting to want to, and I see the useful idiots, you know, I say that affectionately, of course, but I do see the people who have either been deployed by the system to perpetuate this exact madness, or people who have no idea what they're perpetuating. They're just not very smart people, and they want to be in the middle of something. And they're self-important now because they have a Twitter feed. So I've had to really, you know, near the end there with my relationship, and even now when I've gone back on to post some things like this, we'll post tomorrow, and I've just briefly scrolled through my timeline, and I just shake my head now, and I have that moment of the Book of Eli where I look down at that scene and I go, this is really unfortunate that this person believes this, or that these people are coming after this person in this way. But this is not my monkey. It is not my circus. I have to keep walking, because, again, just coming out of this horrible stage of burnout, it would be very tempting with the little bit of juice that I have, that I've been restored to, a little bit of my cup has been filled. It would be very tempting on every neurological level to think, oh, I've got the energy to jump back into this. But at least, you know, I feel like I'm getting a little bit smarter than I was 3 weeks ago. And I'm looking at the floating dumpster fire going, yep, that's not mine. That's not mine to put out. And that's not mine to fuel. So hopefully that will inspire some of you. But Chaplain Chris Cairns, thank you so much for being with us. And we'll be back next week for sure. Again, please remind people where they can find you, follow you on these god-awful platforms, and or reach out via email if they have questions for you.
Well, what's hilarious is last time I gave the wrong Instagram feed, which probably was God keeping me from having to answer dumpster fire. No, right. I'm Chris Cairns 1 on Instagram, Krista Farros with an F on Twitter and or X, and just facebook.com/Chris Cairns. And my last name, again, is a pile of rocks, Cairn. It's where Scottish people used to bury their dead, and my ancestors must have hung out there. We were never the lords of the manor. We were out by the rocks and probably deemed to be the crazy ones.
You know, I'm laughing. But, that's for sure. That's for sure. I would agree with that.
No, I'm the only sane one in the asylum. Sure.
All right. So I laugh every time you explain your last name, because when you showed me the first time I saw like your rocks standing on top of each other, I thought it was like some weird totem thing where I was like, what are you, some occultic priest? Like, what is going on right now? And you're like, no, that's what my name means. I was like, oh man, how did I miss that? So thank you for clarifying.
Just a pile of rocks. If you've ever built one to mark a trailhead, or you climbed K2 and built a little pile of rocks, you know, what it really means is interesting to me, maybe nobody else, but it's a marker that points the way. So hikers will build a cairn to point the way for a trailhead. On the Culloden battlefield, there's a cairn to point the way to the memory of the battle. So it's kind of cool. My name means Christopher Cairns, means the Christ bearer pointing the way.
There you go.
Let that be a lesson to all of you who don't know how to spell cairn terrier. You can just look up piles of rocks, and now you know how to spell cairns. I'm plural piles of rocks.
Piles of rocks, not just a pile. Yeah. Well, thank you for pointing us to the way. We do appreciate you.
Some people just think I'm a pile.
A pile of rocks.
full of something.
Full of something. Yeah,
pile of something.
Well, we appreciate you. Thank you for being here with us, and we'll be back with you next week. You'll be back with us.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks, thank Monica. You. Absolutely. All right, guys. So thank you for your time today. You know, I was just thinking we could, you know, blurt out like 50 million, statistics and all these numbers and all this brouhaha, but hopefully just having a conversation around this and sharing some of our own personal moments with burnout has been is helpful for you. The feedback we've gotten so far is very positive, and so I'm super pumped about that. And, you know, God wants to bless us and ensure that our lives are fruitful and long, right? Long and healthy. So make sure to take time for yourself this week and for your loved ones this weekend. Prioritize, and make sure that the Lord is first, and in your families and yourselves. Remember, be good to your neighbor, beginning in your own mirror. And if you're an American, act like one.